Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
And a good Monday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody had a great weekend. It's nice and sunny here on this Monday morning here in Middle Tennessee, or at least in my parts. Darren McFarland down here in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick over in East Nashville. Chase McCabe out of the west side in Bellevue. And Elijah Campbell back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by Rumble On. .com. Is it indeed sunny in your neck of the woods?
It is in mine.
It's very sunny in my neck of the woods.
All right, good. Yeah. Very good. I didn't want to misspeak because Lord knows I misremember sometimes, but I didn't want to misspeak.
It's okay.
Is nice. Everybody have a good weekend?
Oh, man, it was awesome. Are you kidding? We had games. There was a great line used by Tyson Nash of the Arizona Coyotes who came on the show with us about a week ago. And he said, there's so many sports going on now. You know, you go from no sports for months and now you got all these options. It's like drinking out of a fire hose, he said.
That is a great line. And
that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. I asked that question on a tee and I just wanted to see if anybody hit it out of the park. I mean, that's right. I mean, it was wall to wall. I mean, how nice was it just to turn on the television and just have options galore when it comes to sports? It was fantastic.
My Netflix account popped up and said, are you still here? I'm like, no, I know I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm taking a break. Sports. I mean, that was my, I didn't do a whole lot other than watch TV, watch sports. And, you know, the Braves and the Mets, sorry, Willie. So watch them, watch hockey. Dabbled in the NBA. I'm not as big of an NBA fan as some people, but I definitely watched some of the NBA games. But there's so many hockey games and baseball on that it was just hard to pick. And I had multiple screens going. A lot of penalties called in the hockey games, but it was fun to be able to just watch all these sports. And it's still weird to me being in August. Welcome to August, fellas, and watch hockey.
Yeah,
so that was something.
The NBA looks really cool. I like what they've done. Similar to the NHL, I think those two leagues really talked a lot back and forth about concepts. How do we make this look good on TV? I like the visuals that the NBA has done. It's pretty cool. I watched Memphis played an unbelievably exciting game. They lost in overtime against Portland. Yeah.
Well, then they lost yesterday.
They don't have...
By a buck.
I know, they don't have much. These are teams that they need to stay ahead of too, and this is not good. But it's still, I think it's a good product that they're putting out there. And you know what? Chase mentioned the Mets, the Braves, of course, sweep them. And the first game was the Mets were ahead, 8-2, and then 10-6, and lost. So it's a reminder, right? We get these games back. And I'm sure a lot of Predator fans can relate, and I'm sure Penguins fans and Oilers fans. What comes with the live sports is the exhilaration of a win, but also that frustrating feeling when you lose, right? So you get both, and it's been a while since we've gotten either one. So it's that's what you get when you watch live sports.
Yeah, that game Friday between the Braves and the Mets, that was unreal. Because I'm like, here we go, starting pitching. You know, this is gonna be what gets the Braves this year. They're just not gonna be able to handle it. They have a strong bullpen, but you have two guys in the rotation that are good, and then everybody else, you never know what you're gonna get night in and night out. And somehow, some way, they clawed and battled and came back. And I thought Chip Carey said it best. You know, the Braves may not always win, but they'll give you a finish, and they will fight to the last out, and that's exactly what happened. They ended up winning. So, and I know your Mets have bullpen problems, and you know, that's their big thing. But
the best line that I saw over the weekend on social media was the Mets were sucking for Trevor Lawrence. They were tanking for Trevor.
Well, hey, Cespedes is helping him out there. He's like, you know what? I'm out. I'm done.
Good.
They are.
I'm done with him.
They are just the typical, all the franchises we could go through sports and be like, when a story hits, you're like, of course. Like, the Mets are in that category. It's like, of course that happens to the Mets. Of course. Sorry,
but
Willie,
it's
that's
good.
Just what, that's where they are.
That's good for the Mets. I'm glad that the saga is over. They're better without them. They have plenty of good hitters. Their issue is pitching. But yeah, Cespedes, he can be somebody else's problem next year. But yeah, the Mets are going to Mets. That's the phrase. The Mets are going to Mets.
It's like the Clemsoning thing, right? So the Mets are going to Mets.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's a verb.
Gosh, when I saw the reports over the weekend, I'm like, of course that happens to the Mets. Of course. Like, gosh, it's just unbelievable. They just never can. It seems like every time you start to feel good. By the way, I never did that day. I got distracted. The Friday when we had Chris Rose on, when they were making their predictions, did we figure out who the team was that he was talking about? Did you happen to see it? I didn't see it.
No. I didn't either.
I was on vacation.
Yeah, you were on vacation, and I was wondering. Remember, we were trying to figure out if he was talking about your Mets and Cespedes. Remember the player who hasn't done anything in 2 years?
Yeah, yeah.
The surprise.
Well, now he's going to continue to not do anything for 3 years.
Yeah. What a mess.
Yeah, I wonder if he's just done. If there is a team that would put up with that.
What a mess. Have you guys seen the opt-out list in the NFL?
I have. I was actually looking at it right before the show. It continues to grow.
Man, tell you what. I don't know. I don't know how this is going to look. And by the way, here's something else I was thinking about. Chase, you've heard me say this a bunch, but this is more of a question for Willie because of the history. What drum did I beat I've been beating for well over a decade. If I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 times about NFL referees.
They should be full-time employees.
Yeah, they should be full-time employees. That's what I said. I knew you would get it because I know that you've heard me say that
Look,
many times.
You beat Guess a lot what? Of drums. So.
Guess what? Okay, what? You think about – you don't think that's going to happen with NFL refs? The ones that have other jobs,
yeah,
they're like, I'm not sorry, I'm opting out. I got my other gig. Yeah, so I'm going to go work that safe gig. I'm working from home, so I'm going to go do that gig, and yeah, I'm going to opt out.
Awesome, we're going to get Mac refs in the NFL.
So, I mean, has anybody else thought about that? I mean, are we not going to see NFL refs start opting out? Don't you think that's going to happen?
That's a good point. That's a really good point. But the thing is, a few years ago, they hired full-time refs, and then they were like, we'll just go back to the old way.
And if they were full-time, if that was their only job, you think they would work?
Probably.
Probably so. Yeah, probably so.
Because
they got those other cushy jobs. They got those other nice jobs. They're like, that one's pretty safe, and I make a pretty good living with that one. Yeah, maybe this isn't the year I do. This is not the year I moonlight as an NFL ref. I just think that's coming, and how's the league going to handle that?
Just like I said, you're going to get Mac refs in the NFL. You're going to get the replacement refs again.
Yeah.
How'd that work out?
Maybe we can get a Packers-Seahawks matchup on Monday Night Football.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm just wondering if anybody else has thought about that, because I kind of feel like that's coming.
When does the time deadline? Is it today that you have to opt out if you're going to opt out?
I think it's this week.
I think it's
sometime this week. Well, but they haven't agreed, right? That's why I say that. We'll talk to Teron at 11. Maybe he can clarify, because they haven't completely agreed on the date, have they? Has the PA agreed
I don't know.
On a date?
I'm looking at the list right now. You try to keep in mind that there's more players in the NFL than there are in any other league, right? Because you have these huge rosters. So there should be more names that are opting out. other than the Patriots, I don't see a team that's got more than two, maybe three. And a lot of them have zero or one. So when you consider the roster right now is, what, 80? That's reasonable right now. I just wonder, is there going to be another wave before the deadline hits?
Boy, the Patriots have been ravished by opt-outs, haven't they?
They're the one team that has really taken a hit from the opt-outs.
They'll be fine. They'll be fine when they get Trevor Lawrence.
And the COVID-19 testing positive, I think Jacksonville leads the way with the most positive test.
Wasn't Minshew one of them?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And we now have our second coach, Doug Peterson, now has tested positive. So first it was Sean Payton. Now it's in Philadelphia, Doug Peterson. So second coach now to test positive. But yeah, Jacksonville I think has had like a dozen, I think, positive test.
And if they're not in the bubble, it's going to happen. There
Titans
will be positive tests.
Titans only had, what, their first-round pick, right? Isaiah Wilson, is that it?
Yeah, he's on the COVID list. I'm more and more, when I see the opt-out list, when I see the COVID list, I am getting more and more pessimistic when it comes to the NFL and at least starting on time. I've been saying I thought they would play some games. And I was more of the, they'll start, but will they finish? But now I'm kind of like, I don't know. This might get pushed back. This might fall in line with everything else.
I don't know. I think regardless of when you start, you're going to be dealing with the same issues, I would imagine. If you're not in the bubble, it's just going to take incredible discipline, right? And if you have the discipline to do it, you can probably avoid it. Or you're just going to have a certain amount of people get the positive tests, have to rotate out, and then when they're cleared to play, you come back in. I think that's just going to be life. Baseball is dealing with it, right? They're juggling, they're moving games, and they're
groups. What about when it hits an entire position? How's the NFL going to handle that?
But I mean, that is the way it's going to have to be done. There's no way to avoid it unless you're in a bubble. And I haven't heard anything about trying to go into a bubble. That would be the reason to delay it, is to say, okay, we're delaying for 3 weeks, and we're going into a bubble. I don't know what it's going
to
be. If we got to go to Saskatchewan, if we got to go to North Dakota, I don't know. But that's the only way that you can do this without having happen what is happening in baseball. And you would argue that in football you're more likely because there's more players and they're more closely, you know, together during games, especially during practices and games.
Well, and here's another question too. Ben just texted in, what's the overall product going to end up looking like? I mean, you think about some of these names that are opting out, and they're not like superstars, but some of these guys play important roles on their teams. What's the product going to look like?
Well, what, besides the Patriots, who do you look at and say, like, I'm looking at the list right now. Who else is in that position? Who's really been hurt?
Well, I mean, C.J. Mosley is a play, you know, for the Jets. I mean, they just traded Jamal Adams. So, mm-hmm. I mean, their defense is taking a hit. You mentioned some of these guys are role players. I understand. But, like, if you go to some of the early ones, Star Latulale, he's the starting defensive tackle for the Bills.
Yeah, he's
a first round pick. I mean, Patrick Chung, but Eddie Goldman.
But as has been part of the conversation all along, right? Where you have every year you're going to have guys miss for one reason or another that, you know, you get hurt. I mean, so when it's one or two guys, that's not, to me, enough to say, well, the product's not going to be the same, because Star Lotulelei could have been hurt in the first preseason game in a normal season, right?
Well,
it's like you've been pronouncing hockey names or something. That's good. I understand what you're saying, but think about this. If you have a team that loses two or three role players, and the Patriots are they're you know, in their own little hemisphere right now. But you have a team that loses two or three role players, and then one of those starters gets hurt. Well, then what do you do? I mean, that's Robbie just texted in Funchess with the Packers. I mean, who's Aaron Rodgers got besides his star receiver? So, I mean, that's where you get into some trouble.
It's going to happen.
Some of these guys.
It's going to happen.
Indeed it is. We will come back and discuss what the Predators did yesterday. We'll talk about Game 1, Game 2, what happened over the weekend in hockey. By the way, Michael Ferland has been fined $5,000 by the league for spearing Ryan Hartman right in the gut last night. I don't know if you saw that. How about that? Minnesota blanking Vancouver. Two shutouts in the nightcap last night. And boy, that was easy to predict, right? Columbus and Minnesota. We all knew that was coming. Two shutouts in those games. All the action over this weekend, it was easy to predict in the NHL. Hashtag lots and lots and lots of sarcasm right there. I don't think I got a prediction right over the weekend. We'll come back. More on the other side. Darren Donica Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
8 seconds remain. Free puck there. Sent into the zone. Kemper just fights it off as the puck is wide in front of the net. Now, did we have a whistle before time ran out?
Oh, that pass went right across or bounced over Bonino's stick. He's right on top of the crease. That was the last ditch effort.
This one is over, and the Predators could not overcome the 3-goal deficit they dug for themselves.
There you go, Pete Weber on the call yesterday with Hal Gill right here on these airwaves, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Game 2 tomorrow, 12:30 pregame I'll have for you, 1:30 puck drop. Pete Weber and Hal Gill, they'll be from their broadcast room in Bridgestone Arena, and that game will take place at Rogers Place up in Edmonton, the hub city for the Western Conference. So let's talk about what happened game one. Generic question. Just take it however you want. Open-ended. What was your takeaway from game one?
Well, they lost the game in the first period, really. When you get down to it, I think, you know, they were victimized by a terrible bounce to get things started, and it seemed to stun them for a few minutes. And it went from 1-0 to 3-0 before they started to turn around. I think they showed that they're not going to be overmatched in this series. They certainly have the personnel to win it. But it was disappointing, I think, that they didn't bounce back. And it was a reminder of something that had plagued them earlier in the season, right? Before the coaching change, that was happening way too often, where a bad break or a momentum change wouldn't cost them one goal. It would cost them multiple goals. Now, to their credit, they came back strong. They dominated the third period, and you know they gave themselves a chance to maybe get even in the game. But it's tough in a short series. That was costly for sure. Now they're behind the eight ball.
Yeah, I just think that first period, and I liked the first 5 to 7 minutes of the game. I thought that the Predators had the pressure.
Oh yeah, they came Kemper. Out fine.
Yeah, and it was that bad bounce, and this is what has plagued them, and not just this year. I mean, it's you can go back to the playoffs last season against Dallas. It's just for whatever reason, if something bad happens, it snowballs out of control, and they just couldn't get it back. And you have a player that I really like, Philip Forsberg, and how he's come out through training camp and then the exhibition game, this game. He makes a mistake. It's very rare that you see him make a mistake like that. The Predators were clawing. It was kind of like, okay, they're playing a little bit better. He makes that mistake on the power play, and it leads to a shorthanded goal. And that's just something you don't see a lot out of him. Now, he tried to make up for it. He scored later. They got very, very close to getting this game tied, and then who knows what happens. I mean, I truly believe that if they had forced overtime, they were going to win this thing, but it just had gotten away from them at that point. Those are the areas that they have to clean up, and I don't think it was UC Saros' fault. I thought UC Saros had a pretty good game. They weren't playing great around him. That was the – at one point when things were really getting out of control, that's the only time that I said maybe go ahead and make the switch just – from a mental standpoint of, hey, that lights a fire when you do that, but it was not on Saros. But this is playoff hockey now, so they don't have time. You know, you're down behind the eight ball, down 1-0 in the series. You can obviously get that back, tie it up tomorrow, but you don't have time to mess around, and, you know, they have to figure this out. So that has to be the mindset going into game two.
What was the soft goal or goals in your mind that you would consider pulling UC Saros?
I didn't say that. I said from a mental standpoint, I don't think.
But
this
if it's not a what mental standpoint from what? If you're not blaming the goalie, then what mental standpoint is it?
Well, how many times have you seen a team not helping their goaltender and they're playing poorly around him, and the coach goes, "You know what? I'm not going to do this to my guy. I'm going to make the change," and it lights a fire under the team, like, "Hey, you let him down. You didn't help him. So I'm making the change."
I don't know if I really see coaches do that. I see coaches pull goalies whenever they give up soft goals. That's when I see coaches pull goalies. I mean, I don't know. You know, I was asked this morning on Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad. I mean, I think they're going right back to UC Saros game two. That's just my opinion. I mean, would I be shocked if Pecorine starts? I mean, I would be shocked, no. But I don't know how you hang that on 74. The first one we've already talked about. Just pinball bounces. It happens in hockey. Look, the Predators were fortunate. They have good fortunes as well. I mean, the Philip Forsberg second goal, or was it? I'm trying to think.
Both of them. Both of Philip Forsberg's goals.
Went off. Yeah, the first one.
Forsberg and Ellis. Forsberg and Ellis's goals, each went off a skate of the Coyotes. Yes. Yeah.
Thank you. So I was trying to remember which goal it was. It was the first one, and then the Ryan Ellis goal right out of the gates in the third period. I mean, that's hockey. I mean, that's what happens. And so,
right, but that's a designed bounce.
Then you've got
the other one was
goal.
Not a designed. A double bounce off of two opponents. That's a little fluky. You know, sometimes it bounces your way, but it's kind of designed. It's like I'm shooting it in there, and the strategy is to have it bounce that way. Mm-hmm. I don't know about the one.
I don't know if you could call Turris stick, Duchesne's shoulder up and over the goalie. I don't think I doubt Oliver Ekman-Larsson, who's a really good player, called that. But, I mean, the third goal was a power play goal. The Grabner goal was a shorthanded goal. I mean, I'm not blaming a breakaway on the goaltender. And the Dvorak goal was them, just nobody in front. Nobody putting a body on anybody. Arizona just controlled the slot and the blue ice, the crease there, that whole area. Nobody put a body on anybody. And so they just whacked away, and the next thing you know, they have a goal. I don't blame that on the goalie. I think it's in front of him.
Yeah, and that's what I said. It wasn't his fault. He was not getting any help around him, but I can remember Peter Laviolette several times saying, you know, he'd pull Pecorine and say, well, you know, Pekka played well tonight, and it just wasn't – he wasn't getting the help. They made the change. It happens. So that's right. Where I was going with that.
But we're talking about two different things, though. We're talking about pulling a goalie during a game to change momentum or, you know, not hang the guy out to dry. And then going forward here, we're talking about, do you switch goalies?
No, I'm not saying that at all. You go back
I think
to Saros.
I think Saros played well, but – was it his best? No, I don't think so.
Great,
I mean, you're saying there were zero soft goals and a fluky goal in there. So it's not a bad performance, but you know, in a perfect world, on a day where you know you have some stuff going wrong, do you hope your goalie can bail you out and erase one of those goals somehow, stop the breakaway, or you know, come up with a huge save down low? That's what you're hoping for. But I don't know that they're going to make a change based on that. But it's just one of those games where, John Hines, I thought, said it very well. They didn't respond very well in the first period after that fluky goal. And all of a sudden, the Coyotes are able to cash in twice. Nashville makes a huge push in the second half of the game. But during that time, they made the one big mistake and the Coyotes cashed in. When you're down 3-0, you just can't afford to have that happen, right? Give up a shorthanded goal. And it was the worst possible guy. If you've watched Michael Grabner over the years, that's the one thing he does. He has a knack for shorthanded, and he just gets behind the D. He's an extremely fast skater, and he's really good at finishing
that.
Yeah, so when it's 3-1 and you're trying to make it 3-2 and you're on the power play, that was just a dagger right there. And yet, they still gave themselves a chance to get back in it. So nothing you can do about it now, and if you look across the league, there were so many games where the higher seed lost game one. Tons of them, right? Both 12 seeds won.
Yep.
Columbus beats Toronto. I mean, Minnesota beats Vancouver. You can go right down the list. So
Edmonton,
it's exactly what we expected.
Edmonton. They dominated.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So I want to go back to something that you brought up at the beginning. And this is the one thing that is starting – concern me, not concern me as in, oh my gosh, the series is over, freak out like social media every time the Predators lose. No, It's just about, okay, this has been going on a while. Why does it happen? And there's been a coaching change. So I don't think you can any longer blame it on the head coach. Okay, it's a makeup of – it's the DNA in certain players. Why do these bad patches continue to happen? And that's the thing that I think is a head-scratcher on why this stuff continues to – it's usually that 7 to 10 minute window. In this case, yesterday it was an 8 minute window. And they just it just seems like things fall apart. And I wonder, why does that stuff keep happening? Why does that happen over and over? Because you could say maybe the Grabner play, and I felt that way at the time. I was like, oh, that's probably – and Pete Weber even used backbreaker on the broadcast, and I agreed with him because that's the way it felt like. But you could also say that 8-minute stretch, that 8-minute bad patch is what really did them in. And so I guess where I'm at is why do these things continue to happen with a team that is full of veterans? They're the second oldest team in the playoffs. The second oldest team of the 24 teams that are in these hub cities, they're the second oldest. They've got a lot of experience. Yeah. So why does this stuff keep happening to the Predators? And that's probably what is the head scratcher for me.
Yeah, it's mystifying, and it was something that I thought was in the rearview mirror. But, you know, it was interesting, throughout the whole summer camp and then all the way through the end of the exhibition game, it was really smooth sailing, right? They didn't have any adversity. They didn't have guys coming back to camp out of shape or unfit to play or injured. They didn't have anybody get injured in the camp. They didn't get anybody injured in the exhibition game. They sailed through the exhibition game 2-0. So that was really the first burst of adversity, that double bouncer. We're like, whoa. You know, this kind of ruined our flow here. What's going on? And then all of a sudden, what was happening back in November and December, which I thought they had a better handle on by March, it reared itself. It's hard to explain. It is really hard to explain. Well, but it did happen yesterday, and that's, I'm sure, what they're going to be talking about a lot today.
This is what I think. They don't have, and this has been an issue for the last couple of years, and I don't mean this as an indictment to Roman Josi as the captain, but they don't have that guy that's just going to get in your face and say, hey, get your head out of your you-know-where, and let's get back in this game. Sometimes I wonder if this team is too close.
Well, the guy you're looking for, Chase, they can say those things, words, but they don't have that presence. You know what I mean? Like, some guys can say that, but there's – and this is really in what we've come to know and love about that room, right? It's comprised of some great guys to deal with.
Yeah.
A great room. You're saying they don't have that guy that they fear. Like, Shea Weber is a guy that people feared. Okay,
yeah.
He didn't have to say much. He could look at you, and a lot of them would pee down their leg. I mean, they don't have that guy, right? They don't have a guy that has that presence. Like, you can say things. But, I mean, truly that presence of, oh, crap, when they talk, like, you better be listening and we better do it or else.
Mike Fisher. In a different way than Shea Weber, but Mike Fisher.
In a different way, but yes, agreed. Yeah, agreed.
Mike's one of those guys that, and I put Pekka in this category, but he's a goalie, so it's a little different. But Mike's one of those guys that he's so respected and so loved that, you know, if you let him down, you just feel you feel 2 inches tall. Like, you just feel off.
Right. But you wouldn't say that about Roman Josi or Ryan Ellis? The same kind of respect? I think they've got that level of respect.
Respect. I think they are tremendous guys, tremendous players. Respect, yeah. But not to that level? To Shea Weber type? To certain other guys that we know around the league? I don't know. I don't know if I'm willing to go there. And it's not, like I said, it's respect. Yeah. I mean, they're
at the same stage of his career.
They have letters on their jerseys and they're well respected. They've been there, done it. They're great guys. They're great teammates. Yeah. But we're talking about the whole, like, this guy. And you've heard Hal Gill talk about this guy, a guy in a room that will stand up and, like I said, it'll make you pee down your leg. Like,
you
we
shut
are
up
not
as soon
going
as they
to do
in.
This anymore. Like, this stops right now. And people listen. Z.F. Hutton.
Yeah.
I grant you,
they don't really have that type of guy, and they don't have that guy on the coaching staff either, right? So maybe that's something to think about for sure. But they have who they have now. And those guys don't always help, right? It's not like those guys magically every time they go in there and turn over a cart of drinks or something and start throwing towels and stuff that automatically makes you play better. But I get what you're saying. I think we've all experienced that kind of thing. And sometimes it does shake you up in the right way, but
by no means am I saying this. We're not having this conversation because we believe the series is over or they're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
We're having this conversation because it was brought up and fairly brought up that why do these bad patches continue to happen? And this has been going on for a while. It's not like this just started. And so when you've had the same room for a while and the same things keep happening, then there is an issue. With that, right? Like, it doesn't, like, no longer it's about the same coach. Now they have a different coach, a different voice, a different mentality. And if the same things continue to happen, then it's more about the makeup of your room. That's the way I view it. It doesn't mean that they can't pull out of this. It doesn't mean they don't respond tomorrow and kick butt and they go out there and destroy Arizona and even up the series and go on and win the series. But there is something to the same people doing the same things, you know, you can't get out of that. And so, to me, it's in the DNA. You know, you guys know how much the psychological part of the game I love. I'm fascinated by it. I talk to people all the time about it. You know, because I'm trying to figure it out with 8-year-olds.
Oh, but yeah.
I think 8-year-olds and professional athletes that are adults and 28 years old are two different worlds, you know? And so I tend to, from all the people I've talked to, I feel like you can coach up. You know, we've talked about this with Chris Mason and Hal and others. I feel like you can coach them up at younger years. You can coach and change that mentality. I think once you get to a certain point, I feel like the people that I've talked to, it's kind of in their makeup at that point. Like, you can't coach that out of them. That's just who they are or what they are.
Right, but there's ways, too, that you can impact the game. Like, for example, Roman Josi, in his leadership, is a guy that will put the team on his back on the ice and start ratcheting up his game, revving up, creating offense. He did it again yesterday. That pass he made to Philip Forsberg was an incredible pass. And Philip Forsberg said that was one of the easiest goals I've ever scored because of the pass. He sucked everybody over and then pulled off it. And Hal Gill was telling me after the game, because that looked easier than it was. That's extremely difficult to make that particular pass. It looked easy, but the way he drew in and selled the shot, that's what made the play. So he's a guy that changes the game. I think I think the guy is not necessarily the guy yelling and screaming at everybody, but a guy that is going to go out and change the energy of the game. Not necessarily with a fight, but an inspirational play. Right, a big hit, a momentum turning shift where you're just making all kinds of stuff happen. Mm-hmm. And one way to do it is high skill, but there's other ways to do it as well. That's what they sort of needed in that stretch of 7 or 8 minutes, and it just didn't happen. They got stuck for a few minutes. And as we've said, we've seen it before.
The way you described Roman Josi is the best way to describe him, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with this. There are plenty of guys in professional sports, not just hockey, that lead by example. He leads by example. And he is a world-class elite hockey player. And so does he have respect? Heck yeah, he has respect. Just exactly what you're talking about. But we're talking about something different. You know what I mean? Like, we're talking about the same thing.
And it's not necessarily yelling.
Right. That's right. But he is more of a lead by example. And the example is off the charts, right? You go out there. I mean, we've talked to the players about it. I mean, if you think we're wowed about it, I mean, think about your own colleagues, people that are professional athletes too, and they're wowed by what you do. That shows how unbelievably talented you are. But I don't think that's what we're talking. Like, leading by example, there's nothing wrong with that, and that is going on. But I think you're right. It's not exactly peeling paint or flipping over tables. It's a like look. You said, it's a shift. It's a look.
Right.
It's a mentality. It's a you do something that sparks, that changes that. You know, Cesar Millan, the dog whisperer, he pokes him in the neck, and that changes everything. Like, the dog's crazy. And they
do they need a dog whisperer,
down,
or they're playing the Coyotes? Does it work against Coyotes?
Get Cesar Millan in there and poke somebody in the neck, and it just changes the whole energy in the room or on the ice. I don't know. It's something like that.
We do have to say this, too. I mean, this gets lost because it's all about scrutinizing the home team in this case. And I it's funny. Like, everybody, we've had all these months of built-up excitement for this game, and then the negative people on Twitter, they come out, right? They haven't had anything to complain about for a while, so here you go. And it's a huge game because it's a five-game series. So I totally get it, right? We've had this discussion. They're passionate, right? And that's how people react. So not only did they not get the inspirational play, but they took a couple of bad penalties, right? Which also shot them in the foot a few times. It's one thing that the refs are calling everything, but the actual penalties themselves, if you look, there are two or three in there that are just penalties that you can't take, right? It was obvious, right? A couple
Graylin
in the offensive
the
zone.
Gets called 10 times out of 10 times.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's just something it's a mistake that can't happen when you're trying to battle back and you're in such a big hole. You got to be perfect. And they made it easy on the refs. Duchesne's penalty, I thought, during that bad patch, right, where he got hit, he's down on the ice and he just grabs the guy around the ankle. Yep. That made it easy for the ref.
Tenorti
right there.
Interference right after the first goal.
Yeah.
Right afterwards.
That's one that you really don't want to see right there. That's one, but it happened. And here's my point, though. We can scrutinize the Predators all day and their imperfections. You do have to give the Coyotes credit for cashing in. And for 60 minutes, the Coyotes are not as good as the Predators, I don't think, man for man. But as we've seen around the league, these are all good teams, and you're not going to dominate a team for 60 minutes, right? How do you get through the storms, right? When a team makes a surge, can you hang in there and not give up three and instead give up the one or maybe two? You know, that's what hockey is about. It's what all sports are about, right? You have two good teams out there. So you're not going to dominate. You're not going to play perfect no matter what. And that's what we tend to do a lot of times on a day like today, is we're looking at every little imperfection of the team.
Yeah. You got to give Darcy Kuemper credit too. I mean, when the Predators did get pressure, you know, at the start of the game, and then especially in the third period, I mean, he was making some big saves. So,
The shots were like 17-4 at one point, and it was 4-3, and the Predators got some good. They had some good looks to tie it, right? Yeah. Kuemper made just enough big saves.
Yeah, I agree. So you definitely have to give credit where credit is due, and I you know what you said earlier, Darren. Nobody's panicking. It's one game. You wanted to take game one, but you didn't. And so now you have to put it behind you and be ready to play for game two. But this is the bigger conversation that we've had for a while now of just those patches. And those patches cost them games. How do you prevent those patches from happening? And maybe that's a fix that is going to have to take place later on. I don't know. But it's finding that guy that's in the room now that doesn't have to peel paint, doesn't have to throw things, doesn't have to yell. Greg texted in and he said it perfect. Shea Weber had a quiet intimidation. He said volumes with just a look. It wasn't raising his voice. It was just you saw that look on his face and you knew, okay, Shea's pissed. We gotta go to work now. Because that's what they need. Roman Josi playing by example and leading by example, absolutely. He does a tremendous job of it. Ryan Ellis too, but it's finding that guy that can just look at the bench and go without saying a word, but you read it as, yup, we gotta just get out of our own heads and turn this around. And I don't know who that is. I don't know who that guy is right now.
We'll come back and continue the discussion on the other side, wrapping up hour number one of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Just curious, given this is a shortened series now with just five games, how much does one loss right off the bat kind of put you behind the eight ball?
I mean, it's obviously the ideal world, we would have won every game throughout this whole playoffs. And but that's obviously not going to happen. And we're just looking for, we can't do anything about game one now. We're just looking to game two. We'll have a good day tomorrow, see what we did well, what we can do better. And yeah, there's no time to think about what could have happened. We're just ready for game two.
They got Philip Forsberg. He had a pair of goals in the 4-3 loss in game one. Both of them power play goals. I guess if you're looking for something positive, hey, they went 0-15 on the power play last year in the playoffs, and already through one game, they have two power play goals. So the power play is much better this year in the playoffs.
It just looked better. The way they're moving the puck, they're rotating around. They look very dangerous on the power play. It doesn't have the same feel that it did earlier in the season. I think they took a lot of time to scrutinize it during the break. They came out with some new ideas. You can tell guys are in a little bit different positions on the ice. Mm-hmm. Like I said, they're not sitting in the same position the entire time. As an announcer, sometimes you notice these things, right? It helps the announcer if you know on the far side every single time it's going to be Phil Kessel that gets the puck. You can't see his number, but you know he's there because he's always there. Just the same thing with Ovechkin, right? And those guys are so good, you wouldn't want to move them. But the Predators didn't have the results, right? So they have an approach where sometimes, if you look, they're moving around a little bit more. You don't know exactly where everybody's going to be. That can be tough to defend. So far, that's a positive sign. And I thought, for the most part, guys, 5-on-5, they were fine. You know, they had the upper hand. The numbers will be in their favor. But, you know, you got to get it done. It's all about results right now.
Yeah, the penalty kill, except for, I know they let the one power play goal in, but, you know, they had to kill off a lot of penalties yesterday. They could not
stay out
of
the
box.
They had to kill off a lot. They killed a lot, but they had to go in there a lot.
Right, that's what I mean.
And that was the thing. J.P. Dumont made a good point. He said it skewed all of the minutes, especially in game one. Like, think about it. Nick Bonino, Rocco Grimaldi, Craig Smith. You just didn't see them out there that much as a group because it was all – the special teams took up such a huge portion of the game. I think if it's played 5-on-5, I think you would see the depth of the Predators show up more. But it just wasn't the case. It was one of those games where special teams dictated so much.
Yeah, I was just glad to see those improvements. I mean, I think that was obviously something that we were looking for through training camp. And then, you know, these games early on is, okay, what will special teams look like? Because we always focus on the power play, but penalty kill was bad too. So it was just fixing that all together. And I do think that at least over the weekend, I know we saw a lot of penalties called across the board. So I don't know if that's going to change necessarily. I would expect the hockey in general to get better, because these guys just haven't played. So as they play more, it's going to get better. But, I mean, you look at the game overall yesterday, what was it, 4 special teams goals, the 3 power plays and the shorty that were scored. So, I mean, that right there shows you how important special teams will be throughout these playoffs.
11 power play opportunities between the two teams.
Yeah.
All right, so this is, you know, like the NCAA, The first Thursday and Friday's in the books, okay? First day's in the books. So Saturday and Sunday, it's completed. We made our predictions on Friday. I've got the list right in front of us. If you could figuratively change one of your predictions, like I said, not literally, but after seeing everything, because I think all the three of us watched a lot of hockey playoffs this weekend. Which one would you like to have back? Which prediction would you like to have back? I'll just start it. It started everything Saturday morning. I'm on the wrong side. You guys both took Carolina. Carolina's the better team. The Rangers are not going to win that series, and if I could get a do-over, I would right now switch it to Carolina. The Rangers are just not better than Carolina. You guys were right. I took the Rangers, and it's the wrong pick. I'm on the wrong side.
You're going the wrong way.
Yeah, they're just – Carolina's better,
and that game is actually underway.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So
it's underway. I thought it started at 11.
No, it starts at 11.
Start at 11.
Yeah, it starts at 11. It's in 8 minutes.
Oh, okay. Well, I just pulled it up on NHL.com. It's already got 0-0 up. I'm like, wait, it started already.
Yeah,
so I feel good about that one. The one that I think I would change. I went Winnipeg, and now I'm kind of like, maybe I should have gone Calgary.
Especially what happened.
Yeah. I mean, Scheifele.
Line A? Both Scheifele and Line A.
Yeah.
Now, they're saying Scheifele is not long-term. I don't know what that means. They're in a five-game series. It's not long-term. I mean, you don't have long, okay? You can be done in a week. So,
sure.
Obviously, if Scheifele and Line A don't play in game two, which I think there's a real shot that happens, yeah, I think the Winnipeg series, we all took Winnipeg, and that's looks like that is headed toward being a losing pick.
Now, I picked Montreal, so I feel good there, even though it took overtime. But a win's a win. It's one game.
That was a big upset. If you watch the whole game, that was the classic stealing the game.
Yep.
Right? That was the goal. That was the worst nightmare for the Penguins. Is you played well. You were the better team, but Carey Price stole the game.
And that's why I picked him, because I think Carey Price is capable of doing that. Now, the one that I think a lot of people may say, oh, yeah, I wish I could change, Chicago and Edmonton.
Are
Chicago,
you going to pick one, or are you going to name all of your picks?
I picked one.
I did. I'm just making a point about Chicago and Edmonton. I'm not saying I'm changing. I'm saying that, yeah, Chicago looked good, but I still stay with Edmonton. That's what I was going to say.
Well, are you going through every series?
Yeah, I'm just trying to cover all your bases.
But this, to me, this is a great mental exercise in the five-game series. This is the great exercise of the five-game series. I don't think you can second-guess yourself. Darren, you asked the question. I'm going to give you the line from Hoosiers, Gene Hackman. My team's on the court. I'm not going to change after one game any of my predictions.
Figuratively. I didn't say literally. I said figuratively. We're not making any changes.
I'm not going to second-guess myself.
So you watched everything this weekend. You're like, yeah, okay, I'm on the right
side. I'm going Coach Normandale. I'm going to stick with it.
What? There's no way you could feel that good about everything.
Yeah, okay. So if you're forcing me to do one, I'll do the Wild. Did I take the Wild? I can't even remember.
No, you didn't. I took the Canucks. We all took Vancouver.
Yeah, I think that the Wild would be the one then. They brought it to the table. Kevin Fiala was the guy I mentioned. And sure enough, who scores the first goal of the game? Yep. Kevin Fiala.
Yep. By the way, going back to the Montreal-Pittsburgh game that was Saturday night on NBC, do you know how many shot attempts Pittsburgh had in that game? Anybody care to guess?
A gazillion.
Take a guess.
43.
Throw a number out there. What do you say, Chase?
Well, the game went to overtime. Shot attempts, though, was way more than that.
Shot attempts.
Oh, I'm going to say it was more like 80.
You sticking with 43,
no,
Chase?
No, 72.
So you went up a little bit. Try 96.
96?
96 shot attempts.
That's a lot of possession in your own end. Goal?
Two goals.
No, but I mean, how many shots actually were?
Well, they had 41 shots on the game.
Okay.
41 on
96
goal.
Okay. Attempts.
Yeah, so you're peppering the net. When you get 90, that's peppering the net. That means it's in your end, but you can win the other way, right? When your goalie's making the save, you put the house around him, and then you look for those little opportunities to counter, and that's what they got. Same thing with the Columbus Blue Jackets last night. What do you think the talk shows are like in Toronto today? Can you imagine?
The sky is falling.
Oh, my gosh.
Edmonton and Toronto.
Oh, no question.
They're saying fire Mike Babcock. Oh, wait, they already did.
Yeah, they get shut out. Remember that high potent offense? You know all that money they've got with those guys. Yeah, shut out.
But it's the classic John Tortorella defensive block shots. Just keep the game close, find a little opportunity, and then sure enough, Cam Atkinson does it at the beginning of the third period, and boom, you got yourself an upset.
They don't need no freaking Bobrovsky. Korpisalo.
Who needs Bobrovsky when you have Jonas Korpisalo?
By the way, do you know who – I think this is right. Do you know who the goaltending coach is for Columbus?
I don't.
I think this is right. I should probably look it up before I say it, but I feel pretty good about this.
I'll look it up and tell you if you're right.
Okay. Manny Legacy.
Manny Legacy.
See if that's right.
Darren says – well, hang on. Let me get this ad out of the way. Like, come on. I
damn pop-ups.
I don't want to buy season tickets to the Columbus Blue Jackets. All right, you say Manny Legacy.
I need info here. I don't need tickets. I need info.
For the win?
Survey says you are correct, sir.
All right. Manny Legacy. How about that? You think he's done a pretty good job as their goaltender coach?
Yeah.
I'd say he's to be commended because, remember, Korpisalo was hurt a lot during the season, and they brought this other guy up, Elvis
Gerback.
No, not Elvis Gerback. Not Elvis Gerback. Elvis Merzlikins.
Sure.
And he did tremendous. Bless his you. Job. He did a tremendous job.
I didn't realize Paul McLean was on their coaching staff, or I forgot he was.
But just imagine the nuttiness in Toronto. Edmonton is one thing, but Toronto is a whole other animal, right? What's going on right there in that city? I can guarantee you. I wish we had Elliot on today just to try to put it into words.
Well, it could be worse by Thursday.
Well, what do they have wrapped up in those first two lines? They're top six. What do they have wrapped up money-wise? What do you
a
think?
A small
that?
Town in Toronto.
It's a giant percentage of their cap.
Yeah. Okay. They got shut out.
Well, $10 million for Tavares, $11 million for Matthews,
I thought it was 12. Isn't it 12?
Maybe it is 12. It's close to 12. If it's not 12, it might be between 11 and 12. I'm not sure. And then Marner, you know, he's making a huge amount as well. You could see it though, right? Are you really that surprised? Now, if you'd have told me, hey, listen, Columbus is going to win, Arizona is going to win, both of the 12 seeds are going to win, then I would have said, wow, that's a lot.
And Montreal.
Of unpredictability. Yeah, both 12 seeds. I mean, that's a lot. It's the extreme, but it's something we discussed, right? When you let Chicago and Montreal in, there was a chance that this could happen. Now, they haven't won the series yet, right? This is one thing that I said. I know that Adam has the stats from all those series in the 70s and the 80s where the team that won game one won 80-something percentage of the time. But I did say before all these series started that there will be multiple teams that lose the first game and come back and win the series. Certainly, we're hoping that one team is involved in that. But I do think we're going to see a lot of twists and turns in this series. You can't freak out after the one game. But the freak out is a natural thing.
You don't think these will all be sweeps?
I don't think Montreal is going to sweep.
You don't? Yeah, okay.
The right. Penguins.
I just wanted to make
but
sure.
But it could happen.
So
but,
all
but
the game one winners
that's
don't
the beauty
just go
of,
on
it's
sweep
the beauty
the
of the game and the thing that drives you crazy is in a hockey game, anything can happen. You can have bounces like it happened yesterday where it hits two of your players, two who are not even standing anywhere near the net. Kyle Turris was, 60 feet from the net. Matt Duchene is standing in the circle to the side of the net, way away from the net. How could you ever? That was a magical puck.
Yeah, that's called, you know, NHL playoffs. That's what we know. That's what we said.
Even that for
I mean
that's
to think,
that's unreal.
I told you, it's
you
the
could
hardest
never do that
game
again.
To predict. It's crazy. Like
that's why we love
so
it.
Hard.
But it'll drive you to the psychiatrist, the sports psychiatrist. He's waiting for you on the couch.
And watch, how many times have we seen this? All these teams we're talking about, and then we'll watch the teams that lost, the confusing loss in game one, like, oh, my gosh, I can't. And watch what happens in game two. And watch how many times they come out and they take care of business and everything's back even at one and then everything quiets down. That's hockey. And then they turn around and then game three, something happens. They're just like, oh, my gosh. And then game four, they even it back up. But it's like. Oh, that's hockey playoffs. It's
okay. Let's look at 2014. The LA Kings, they were down 3-0 in the first round. These are the Stanley Cup champions. They were down 3-0 in the first round. They end up winning three game sevens on the road to get to the Stanley Cup Finals. Now you think that there weren't some range of roller coasters of emotion for the fans during that run? It's not like nobody breezes through, right? That's my point. Especially in the nature of this game.
We will talk with TD on the other side to kick off hour number two of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players' $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.